At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
Hello and welcome to the Sky U podcast by the Daily Gopher. I'm Chris, Go Way U Fur. With me this week is Blake, Iowa Gopher.
Happy to be here as always.
And U Street.
Hey y'all.
All right, so we were kicking around, what exactly do we want to talk about on today's Sky U podcast? It's not like there's been a ton of news. You know, Gophers have had some practices. Nothing big has happened since Zach Anikstead went down. Everyone knock on wood that I didn't just, you know, jinx our season. And we were just feeling a little unsure about where to go. And then we started talking about what the Gophers were going to do with left tackle. Obviously, they've announced that Sam Schluter will be the starting tackle opposite Daniel Falele. And it's kind of hard for us to feel super confident about Sam Schluter because, well, he kind of struggled last year. Here's hoping he does a lot better. But then it dawned on us. Let's not do the negative Minnesota thing. Let's not sit here and talk about all the ways that decision or any other decision could lead to disappointment and heartbreak. Let's go wild homer take. And that is the focus of today. We are going to do nothing but wildly optimistic takes on the upcoming Minnesota season. And hopefully all of them will prove true, because if they do, we're going to be pretty happy. So let's just start out with the wildly homer take edition of the Minnesota offense. And Blake, I'm just going to kick it to you to start. What are your absolutely outrageous, absurd, super not likely to come true, but completely optimistic takes about the offense this year?
I think the Gophers will have 2,000-yard receivers for the first time since I have no idea when.
That's probably ever. If we're honest, that's probably ever.
And I think they've got the guys to do it. I think Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman are both 1,000-yard receiver caliber like players. Whether they'll have the opportunity to do that with this offense with Tanner Morgan under center, or just the type of matchups they're going to get in the Big Ten, that remains to be seen. But I think if they can get the passing game cranking this year, it's definitely in the realm of possibilities.
I mean, that's definitely keeping in line with the optimistic takes, I guess. My optimistic take would be we get back to the 2,000-yard rushers. I'm trying to go a little more like traditionally Minnesota with my homer take. I certainly feel like, you know, just like you said, there's enough talent. It is really easy to get a full homer about the offense. Like, even with the questions at quarterback, like, there's a lot of talent on the offensive side of the ball.
I say the only thing that gives me pause about, like, 2,000-yard rushers and, you know, getting back to the grounded pound offense is just like the health of Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks. You know, I know we're supposed to be optimistic, but I just can't make that leap yet, not knowing like what kind of production we're going to get from them this season. But I mean, it's certainly possible if we have three healthy running backs, you know, or Ibrahim, Smith, and Brooks for the whole season. I mean, that's just going to be wild.
I would like to note that not only has Minnesota never had 2,000-yard wide receivers in a single season, in the history of the program, there have only been 5 receivers who had 1,000 or more yards in a single season.
So 2 with 1,000 yards would be crazy.
That would be an acceptably wildly homer optimistic take.
It would be a lot. You may have stepped a little far onto the limb.
The funny thing is that was actually going to be my optimistic homer take.
See, I'm not alone.
I think that the offense, there is a lot of reason to be excited about the running backs, and I think having the offensive line being a little more solidified, especially the right side of the line, I'm very bullish on the IMG Academy right side of the line, means that there's probably a decent aspect of running. But Rashad Bateman is phenomenally good. Tyler Johnson is phenomenally good. And Tanner Morgan is okay. And honestly, that's really kind of all you need to set a whole lot of receiving. Now, I don't think they're going to be like Texas Tech anytime soon. But I think that's one very optimistic homer take you do. My optimistic homer take is that Brevin Span Ford is going to lead the team in touchdown receptions.
Okay.
I mean, that's an interesting direction.
Because I think he's going to get lots of vultures.
Well, I thought you were just going to sell out and go full, you know, Tanner Morgan will throw for 4,000 yards or something, but...
If Tanner Morgan throws for 4,000 yards, we're no longer in the wildly homer take offense. We're in like Kirk Shiraka magically became Cliff Kingsbury. Which like a lot of people might appreciate.
I'm here for that. Seriously.
Do we think Seth Green will lead the team in touchdowns again?
No, I think Brevin Span Ford is going to lead the team in touchdowns.
In touchdowns overall?
Yeah, that's my wildly optimistic homer take. I think everyone else is going to vulture each other. Okay. So in short yardage situations, and I've been, to be clear, I've been bullish on Brevin Span Ford since he was recruited. Like, I think you have the exact kind of player that you need to be a phenomenal tight end in the Big Ten, but also just to be a really nightmarish wide receiver matchup. Dude's 6'7", he's apparently 270 now, hasn't lost any steps, was a really good basketball player in high school, got a really good vertical. So you've got a freak level athlete who's quick and can catch. And if we recall back in the day, newly Minnesota Vikings player Nate Wozniak, we were all really excited about the possibility of Nate Wozniak because he was, you know, 1,000 feet tall, or as we call it around the blog, Chris.
I am kind of tall.
That was going to be great. Like, look at all the mismatches. And then we found out that Nate Wozniak and catching footballs were locked in a sort of mortal war with each other.
That's also why we call it being Chris.
Also Chris. Brevin Span Ford can catch. And so one of the things that I think what my wildly optimistic homer take is going to happen a lot is that the Gophers can march it down the field with the intermediate passing game and the running game, and they'll get into the sort of 10 yards and in touchdown place and at that sort of part of the field, and that is where I think Brevin Span Ford will come into his own. So that's my wildly, wildly optimistic homer take.
I'm going to laugh when Jake Paulson leads all tight ends in touchdowns.
I'd be fine with that too, as long as that number is double digits.
Are we also to assume then that you would say that Brevin Span Ford is your wildly homer take player? Like, you'll have some, like, that's the breakout player for you?
No, the breakout player, I think, is Mo Ibrahim.
He already broke out.
Well, that's the thing. Here's why I actually think this is a justifiably wildly optimistic homer take. And not just because I'm being all hipster and being like, nah, I've got a different person for this, like a deep cut. Everyone's saying that the dude broke out, and everyone's putting him as their third string running back. And that to me is bananas.
I'm not putting him as the third string running back. I think he's the starter.
He's the one I have most confidence in.
So the general consensus, apparently not from us on the podcast, because we're obviously brilliant, but it seems to be that Roddy Smith will be the starting running back. He'll be running back 1A. And supposedly Shannon Brooks will come in whenever he's healthy and take over running back run B. And then Ibrahim's going to spell them. And that to me is very strange because when I watched him run, keep in mind, you got 1,000 yards in what, like 7 real games last year?
Yeah.
Think that's right? I don't know. No, whatever it is, it's not. It wasn't a full 12
games.
He
missed 3 games.
So, but he wasn't also playing like extensively in the games that until he became the starter. He was the starter for what, about 7 games?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. And I'm not just saying that because I said 7 games before. Honestly, I can't remember. But it wasn't double digits is the key point. Dude is a really good running back. He's like a David Cobb-esque running back, which is so perfect for this offense. His blocking got better. I think there's a good chance that he may be able to get some stuff out of the backfield if his hands have gotten any better. He's really good at running downhill, north and south. He's got a low center of gravity, so it's hard to take him down. That's a really talented running back, and I feel like he's being slept on. So he is my wildly homer player, is that by the end of the season, he is cemented as the first string running back. even with the other slate of very good running backs on this team. And I think Rodney Smith is great. But if I'm being wildly Homer optimistic take, that's the wildly Homer one.
All right, Chris, who do you got for Homer player?
Oh, God. Am I allowed to just say Daniel Falele gets all the pancake blocks? Because I'd like to see him get all the pancake blocks.
I mean, you just did, so yes.
Yeah, that's fair.
Then I want to see all the pancake blocks. So my wildly Homer take is not only does he get all the pancake blocks, but he wins the Peisman.
That would be awesome. That's definitely a Homer take.
So just a quick recap for anybody who's not like deep into the make-believe awards side of things. The Peisman is SB Nation's award for the lineman, offensive or defensive, who scores the best touchdown of the season. So basically best fat guy touchdown. And I think it's quite possible that he wins that award. So I'm here for pancake blocks and fat guy touchdowns. How about you, Blake?
I'm going to go Tanner Morgan. I think he's the clear starter, and I think he takes it and runs with it this year and takes a big leap from freshman to sophomore year, and I think he does well. And then he's got the talent around him. He's got a great wide receiver core. The offensive line will be strong, especially if Schluter has improved at all in pass protection this year. I think it's all set up for him to have a big year. If he can take advantage, I think he does.
4,000 yard big, or?
I wouldn't go that far. I'd probably 3,000 maybe?
Sure, yeah, let's just throw. There's an extra 1,000 in receptions out there somewhere. I mean,
I'm briefly running through the math of what we've come to if we sum our Homer take possibilities. He has to throw for at least 2,000 yards to two players, but he also is going to have to throw for at least a couple hundred to some other people.
Chris Simon Bell's got to get some receptions in there. We got obviously Brevin Spanford, Jake Paulson. There's plenty to go around.
Demetrius Douglas, who might feature a nom in his four games.
You're forgetting about the tackle eligible Daniel Falele.
That's true. Clay Geary, Seth Green, there are a lot of people. So he's going to throw for much. But also, Ibrahim's going to get himself 1,000 yards. Potentially, Rodney Smith is also going to get 1,000 yards. This offense is apparently never leaving the field.
No.
So we've basically moved them up to, like, what was the most productive offense in recent NFL history?
In NFL history? Probably the Patriots when they almost went undefeated.
Yeah, so we're basically them now. Great. Everyone, you've heard it here first. This is the Patriots, only without, you know, the Kirk Ferentz asshole head coach.
I'll take it.
I mean, with if we're being uncharitable, the Josh McDaniels head coach.
That's cold. No, you retract that right now.
If we're doing like it's like the Patriots, there is a Josh McDaniels analog on the University of Minnesota sidelines.
I don't like this comparison anymore. Take it back. We're now the Saints or something. I don't know. Defense. We're going to defense before I have to hate myself for thinking of the Patriots out loud. Street, what's your wild Homer take for the defense?
They don't suck.
That's not wild enough. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as a wild Homer take, someone other than Carter Coughlin will have at least 6 sacks.
Boy Mafe. Or Teyon Devers. That'd be
yeah, I don't really care who. Just someone other than Carter Coughlin will have at least 6 sacks. I think the pass rush is going to be a lot better. I think Joe Rossi has shown a lot of things. We're obviously wildly Homer optimistic about his transformation of the defense. I think that's going to continue. But one of the consistent problems that the defense had last year is that other than Carter Coughlin, they could not generate a sufficient and successful pass rush. This mattered a lot because the secondary was beset by injuries and depth problems. And it doesn't matter. You could be at the college level, you could be Alabama or LSU good in the secondary, and it does not matter if the opposing quarterback has 5 or 6 seconds to throw every single time. You're still going to get burned. This season, there, I think, are some open questions about the secondary just because the players who are coming back were either coming back from injury or still a little bit raw or a little bit new. I'm more bullish on the secondary than I think some other people are. But that secondary needs a lot of help, and it's got to come from the front four or the front three, depending on how Rossi chooses to regularly line up. So my wildly homer optimistic take, as Blake said, is either Boy Mafe, Teyon Devers, or a player to be named later, who is not Carter Coughlin, has at least 6 sacks.
Okay. Blake, how about you? Big homer take for the defense.
This one's huge. If you guys weren't already sitting down, I'd say sit down. Antoine Winfield plays in at least 12 games this season. and
I hope so.
And records double-digit tackles against Maryland and a pick six. That's my homer.
That is wildly homer. You could have just said finishes a complete game against Maryland and plays the next week.
What the? If you remember, the weird thing is his freshman season, he played against Maryland and he had a pick six in that game. And the two games, the two Maryland games after that, he's been injured. I think they've had it out for him. And to break the cycle, he's got to get another pick six against Maryland, and the curse is broken. That's what's going to happen. So it's going to happen. He's going to finish out the season not missing any time due to injury. That's my homer take. Antoine Winfield, come on down.
I'm actually struggling for a homer take on the defense, if I'm honest.
Is it because you can't actually name a defensive player?
Winston De La Boudiere?
Who's great, by the way? I think he has the chance for a good senior season. Also, seems to be doing a lot of really great stuff in the community. Shout out to him.
Winston's awesome. My problem is that I'm not feeling especially homer about the defense for some reason. I just realized in this moment.
Chris, this is the homer pod. This is the homer podcast.
I'm working on it, and your joyous optimism has come through the phone lines. I am here for it now. I have decided that for some reason, Nebraska is allowed to bring their dumbass black shirt jerseys on the road with them. They choose to wear them. Wait, that doesn't make any sense. That'd be the offense. Oh, God, I am really struggling. I was going to say they get their rung up, but that would be an offensive.
I mean, the way that you would make that work just for logical consistency is they bring their, did you say dumbass jerseys?
Yeah, I don't think those are cool at all.
Yeah, they bring their, quote, dumbass jerseys, which are the supposed black shirts, to Minnesota, and the University of Minnesota offense runs all over their defense. But, to make it logically consistent, the Gopher defense acts like the black shirts of old, minus, you know, the horrible violence off the field and steroids, to the Nebraska offense.
Yeah, that feels unsatisfying somehow, mostly because I screwed up the whole, like, thing we were going for. So I'm going to say a defensive tackle of some sort finishes with more tackles for loss than any defensive tackle in Minnesota history. I haven't decided which of our, like, we're not sure on them defensive tackles would do that. But defensive tackle to be named later. All-time tackle for loss leader in Minnesota history. There you go.
That would be really great, since I think most of them are going to be like a three tag or taking multiple blocks. So to act to open up gaps for the linebackers. That might change, of course. But a lot of the ways that the defense has interacted in the past, especially the defensive tackle position, is a control position for the offensive line. So if they could get pressure, that would be great.
Thank you for pointing out that I don't know how to watch film for defensive tackles.
I mean, it's entirely possible that I accidentally said the wrong technique for our tackles. So, like, let's not get ahead of ourselves. I mean, mostly it's that OJ Smith last year, when he was in, tended to be really successful at this, and that they just ate up offensive line. And while it was true that there were strengths and weaknesses to that, when the defense was playing really well, especially after Rossi returned, the defensive tackles would do a really great job in just destroying blocks and thus opening up lots of gaps for the linebackers to run ragged in the back.
You know, let's be clear, and I know we're staying on the optimistic side, but I will note, the problem was not that the defensive tackles couldn't eat blocks, it was that the linebackers were wildly out of position or on skates the whole damn time. So
there were, as I said, strengths and weaknesses to the Rob Smith version of that defense.
All right, so wildly optimistic homer take: the defense is not coached by Rob Smith. Congratulations. All right, we need a wildly homer player for the defensive side. I'm going to turn to you, Blake, for your wildly homer player.
I'm going to go with Kamal Martin, just because I think a lot's going to be asked of him this year, and he's kind of been a guy that's been under the radar since he's been here. He's had some big moments, some good plays, but he just had a quiet reputation overall, and he's going to be relied upon to step in for Blake Cashman a lot this year. And I really think he goes out with a bang as a senior, and I don't think he's going to be quite to the levels that Blake Cashman was, but I think he's going to be a really good linebacker and set the tone for the rest of the linebacker corps, which is a pretty young unit, so...
Street, how about you?
That's a good question. I would also have been happy to say Kamal Martin. I think he's going to have a good senior season. But to be unique, I will say Benny Sapp will be the breakout defender. Antoine Winfield obviously is going to be the major component in the secondary. I think Jordan Howden will be the other safety across from him. But from a depth reason, and at least in terms of sheer talent, Benny Sapp, before he started never having functioning knees, was getting heavily recruited by lots of top schools as a sophomore in high school. I think the talent is still there. I believe that if he is able to be healthy for a full year, the Gophers will very much consider that a steal.
I'm going to do what's called pulling a Blake and pick a player who's already broken out but will have such a momentous, powerful impact as to, you know, merit homer take level.
Is Carter pulling Coughlin, a Blake because you've forgotten that I am the person who said that on offense?
I swear to God, if you're picking Carter Coughlin as your breakout homer player, you are going to be ejected from this podcast.
Carter Coughlin goes full ham and cements, like, top 10 first-round draft pick status.
That is, I mean, that is a wily homer take. There's also no way that's happening. But and I hope he has a really great season. But I nah, bro.
Full ham. You heard it.
It'd be pretty sweet.
You can't eject me now because now we have to wait for this to come true.
It will not.
I mean, let's see, I guess here's a reasonable question. What would it take in order for Carter Coughlin to be a top 10 pick?
25 sacks.
Yeah, he'd have to be like close to at least 20. Plus
a hell of a combine day. Plus a hell of a combine day, probably.
So like Clay Matthews-esque. But NFL Clay Matthews.
Yes.
I'd be okay with that if he wants to do that at the college level.
He'll get 17 of those sacks versus Iowa.
I would love that.
Nate Stanley will have no functioning limbs by the end of it. He will be the Black Knight.
All right.
From Monty Python.
Chris clearly,
thanks to Carter Coughlin.
Chris clearly knows how to win me over to his side because just the thought of that. yes, please.
All right, special teams, wild homer take. Blake, you go.
The punter doesn't have to come out all year.
I like it. Street.
They have a functioning field goal kicker, which, given how the kicking competition appears to be shaping up over the last year, is at the moment a wildly optimistic homer take.
I feel like we're sliding back into negative town. So I'm going to go with the field goal kicker to be named later. Goes out and sets a school record for percentage and makes.
Okay, that's fair.
Do we have wildly homer players for special teams?
I honestly cannot tell you a single player who is the punter or the kicker.
Jacob Herbers is the punter. I think kicking, it's between Brock Walker and I can't remember it. The name escaped me. I don't think it's Grant Ryers. I don't think he's the other one. Michael Tarbutt, I don't think, was getting much attention. I just can't. The name escapes me right now.
Well, Herbers can't count as a breakout player because he did that last season.
No. I have a way.
Demetrius Douglas did quite well in the special team and sort of punt kick return. I think he'll have another good season. But yeah, my breakout individual player is the field goal kicker who is apparently not bad that will materialize.
Here is how that works for Herbers. You may recall our blog has a love affair with punters. Most importantly, we like to have a love affair with punters who are willing to do punting celebrations. I believe the majority of my punting celebration gifts for Peter Mortel all came from a game against Penn State at home. So my bold prediction is Jacob Herbers downs all of his punts inside the five against Penn State and delivers just an absolute walk-off, gift-worthy moment, forcing me to return to my gift-making ways.
Just so we're clear, your breakout special teams player of the year is yourself for making gifts of them.
No, they have to do awesome things first. Then I get to have fun.
All right.
Oh, by the way, Michael Lance, the freshman from Georgia, I think it's in between him and Brock Walker for kicker, for the record. The name finally came back to me.
It's a bummer because Tarbutt is unquestionably the best name of all of them.
To be clear, it came back to you is I went to the Googles.
You can't see me right now, so there's no evidence that I did that. I'm not going to confess to that.
I'm just checking. Let's get some wildly homer schedule predictions, which unfortunately for me seems to match much too closely to my actual schedule predictions, because I somehow have talked myself into Happy Town. Street, you're not allowed to have a wildly homer
prediction. Wait, no, believe that I have to abstain from this question, as this year, like every year, I predict them to win every single game they play.
Yeah, okay, so your wildly homer prediction is they win every game, but one of them is played on the moon. Blake?
Obviously 12-0 is the pinnacle homer take. The last time they won 10 games was, what, like 2003? I think to me that's the homer take, is they win 10, 11 games and win the Big Ten West. That's a prediction. My big homer prediction would be that they finally win at Kinnick and Iowa City for the first time in, like, 12 years.
Is it possible this year with the schedule that the Gophers can hold every single trophy? The Governor's Bell, of course, does not count.
If they play Michigan in the title game.
So there, I think, is a reasonably wildly homer take for you, given your 10 wins, that the Gophers at the end of the season hold every single trophy that they play for.
Honestly, that would be awesome. I'm in favor of the jug being on the line in the title game if they didn't play in the regular season. Because I think that what happened in the regular season happens in the regular season, the title game is worth the title game. But if they haven't played already, you give them the championship trophy and the jug. So that would be awesome. I'd love to see that.
All right, honest talk. Not homer talk for this one thing, but honest talk. Would you rather have Minnesota win the Big Ten title game if it meant they went to the college football playoff to get smoked by Alabama? Or would you rather have them lose it so they could go to the Rose Bowl?
Lose it. If I'm being honest, lose it.
All right, if those are the two options?
Yeah.
I mean, Rose Bowl, I suppose, to get rid of that particular, you know, long title. In terms of the program's future, get smoked against Alabama. Because you made it to the playoff.
Stop being so rational. I did ask for real talk.
I gave you the real talk. I mean, in terms of, for me personally, I would much prefer the Rose Bowl. That is a relatively short trip.
Absolute homer take. We go to the Rose Bowl and win. That's my homer
take. There we go, man. That's good. I'll take that.
Which is the national championship bowl this year?
It's a good question. I have no idea. I don't worry about such things when I'm a Gopher fan.
Wait, because this is how little I care about the college football playoffs, since Minnesota's really not, like, in it. Are they still using one of the existing bowl sites, or did they start moving into the hosting randomly thing?
I don't remember.
Yeah, we can't be concerned with such things.
I mean, it really doesn't apply to us, so I've just never bothered to worry about it. That's more of an Ohio State nonsense thing.
I was going
to
say, when I was recently looking at, like, what other sites do for, like, weekly stuff, Clemson had, like, a playoff preview in, like, week one. I was like, oh, that must be kind of cool to look at.
It must be nice to have dreams.
We got the Big Ten. We got the folks in the Big Ten, guys. Big Ten West. We got this. Homer take.
All right. Well, we have a question time this week, but before we do, we need to hear a little something from our sponsors. Question time, question time, question time has returned. This week we have an important wedding season related question. Technically, this is in reference to a fall wedding, which I personally am not a fan of, but I think it's important that everyone who's enjoying their wedding have the opportunity to do so in the most fun way possible. And those who are attending should be able to bring them cool gifts. But what happens when you are unable to attend a wedding? Far away, it doesn't work timing-wise because you need to see Minnesota play South Dakota State. Whatever it is. I think the question that came up kind of in our pregame planning here was, what is the appropriate gift or dollar amount to give to somebody that you are super excited to be at the wedding, but you can't make it for some reason? And Blake, I'm interested to hear your take on that.
I was told that the etiquette, if you're giving money, is to like at least pay back the cost of what your plate would have been, or like your cost of your dinner. And again, I'm not sure how much that would be, honestly, even though I, you know, got married like 4 years ago, you'd think I'd remember that stuff, but I do not.
What was your food at your wedding?
The type of food, I think we had a choice between like chicken or pork. I'm pretty sure.
Did you have an open bar?
We had like 3 or 4 kegs
that counts.
Yeah. No wrath from me. You are a good person still.
No, yeah, we knew we were going to need some alcohol flowing, and they worked their way through it pretty well. So, but as far as gifts, yeah, it's money account, whatever you're comfortable with. It depends on people's budgets too. Whatever you feel comfortable giving. I usually give between like 25 and 30. If I'm not going to buy something off the registry. And I'm the guy that goes to the registry and looks for the most obscure item, not necessarily the cheapest, just like the weirdest one. That I can leave like a note to, like a cousin of mine just got married and they registered for a flashlight. And so I bought that and then put on the card, I hope this guides you through the darkest days of your marriage.
That's both sweet and also, I think you purchased the cheapest gift.
Actually, it was fairly expensive. The flashlight was, it was a very like heavy duty flashlight.
Did it also have GPS or something?
Possibly. I don't know. It was a very large flashlight, seemed like, you know, 21st century capabilities.
I mean, you can put them on your head now. They weigh an ounce and they go for 2 football fields. I don't think size is really necessarily 24th century.
All right, Chris.
Keep telling yourself that.
Yeah, it's easy for you to say that, Mr. What, 6'10 over there. You know, size doesn't matter. It's okay.
Not all of us are our own personal lighthouses, Chris.
I do have a story of the greatest wedding gift I got. Because, like, the morning after, like, we did the gift opening the morning after. And this is Gopher football related. I will say that. We opened up gifts the morning after at the hotel. And it's like, obviously, you haven't slept very much. And it's just, like, you know, the stuff that you registered for. And as I'm opening up one, it's from one of my groomsmen who happens to work at University of Michigan. He works in the athletic department there. And I opened it up. And then I had just gone. This was just after Minnesota had reclaimed the jug. And I was at the game. He got me tickets. And so I open it up. It's the replica trophy of the Little Brown Jug. And I had no idea that that's what I was getting. And, like, it was just, like, I was totally taken by surprise because, you know, you get, like, you know, like, towels and other house items. And all of a sudden you open up and it's the Little Brown Jug. And I was like, holy shit, this is, like, the coolest wedding gift we could have possibly gotten.
Okay, that is pretty awesome.
What did your spouse think of that particular wedding gift?
She was happy for me. She thought it was really cool, but then she realized I had totally lost interest in everything else at the table. So gotta take the good with the bad.
Sounds like Christmas when you have that gift from the one like extended family member who always spends too much, and your parents have to hide it till last because if you get a hold of it first, nothing else is gonna matter.
That was exactly the situation.
Street, what do you think you should send?
Well, this is, to be clear, I am the person who raised this because, thanks to the United States Postal Service, I received an invitation to a wedding that I would have loved to attend approximately 3 weeks before the wedding occurred, and the wedding is on a different coast than I am, so I will not be able to attend. So I'm looking at the registry, and I, of course, understand the notion that you don't actually have to get anything, but that's, like, true in general, and therefore not fun. So our discussion in some sense presumes that you would like to purchase a gift or give money. Right now, I'm looking at this Le Creuset gravy boat, which seems kind of nice. But here's the thing that I'm a little confused by. So one of the magic of new technology is that you, the people who are getting married, that they can have their wedding registry, and they can also tell you, depending on the site, that like, we really want this. So their most wanted gifts are very much in my price range, but they're also towels. And it feels a little bit impersonal to be like, hey, can't come to your wedding. Here's a thing for when you're gross. Hope you have a really good marriage.
Why do you assume they have to be gross? Perhaps they're ultra cleanly and they take 7 showers a day, so they're always clean when they take a shower.
All right, here's the thing to like feed into your weird OCD solely over cleanly showering. I hope you don't do this to your kids, because otherwise they're going to grow up very sick. Now, I'm thinking of having something that is like, hopefully something obviously they want. So obviously don't go rogue and be like, hey, I saw these like fun matching overalls at a thrift store, and that's what I'm going to send you. I don't ever send an obligation. But I think from the outside thing, my view is that I should be spending as much money as I would have spent on the actual gift, should I come, plus some percentage, because I'm no longer having to spend the money to go to the wedding. That's my view.
That seems pretty reasonable. I'm of the opinion that you just send, it's okay to send the money and just write a really nice card and then point out that you want them to be able to buy the thing they didn't get or spend it on the foolish experience or whatever. Like, I mean, gift registries are nice, but nobody's going to turn down cash either. Like,
I'm a huge list person. I come from a list family. I think you can break the world in terms of like gift receiving into two kinds of people. They're the kinds of people who like lists and the kinds of people who don't like lists. And it's not like this is some, I don't know, like war in Northern Ireland thing. Like, you can easily intermesh these two people and they'll get along just fine. But I do think that if you know that you're dealing with a list person and you go off list, you got to be really, really solid that you got something good. And conversely, like, as a list person who's been told for years that I'm really poor at receiving gifts, because like, if you got me something off my list, I'm obviously already excited about that because it's something I really wanted. That's why I put it down. So I don't necessarily give the appropriate level of happiness and emotion when I open the thing, because in some sense, you know, I kind of want it and I already expected it. So I'm a big list person, which is why cash feels, not that it feels impersonal, because that's not what I think, but it does feel a little bit like I'm going to give you another errand, as opposed to like, here's something that you already asked for and I'm going to be the middleman for that transaction.
But that's why you like write a really nice card.
That's a fair point. It's a fair point.
Like, if you just throw it in a card, like, you're a sociopath. But you know, if you write some meaningful, like, heartfelt words with it, then you're the super kind person who wanted to give them the world in any form they wished.
Very true.
Also, important wedding-related question. I'm going to be present for a wedding overseas in January that I'm super excited about. Do I splurge on the business class, even though I have no money with which to splurge on the business class, knowing that I might actually function as a human being afterwards?
Where's the wedding?
Or do I just... India?
Oh, shit.
Oh, that's a bit of a different question then. I was going to say, Europe, the answer is an obvious no.
No. You stay awake, you deal with your jet lag, and you suffer. But this is a 15-hour flight from JFK.
How much can you not afford it?
My credit card company will love me. I won't love my credit card bill.
That's a tough one.
I think, and part of this is because, you know, you're the size of the Empire State Building, is that having a 15-hour plane ride, there is also sort of extended problems of just sitting in that seat. I don't know if it's worth business class necessarily, but it might be worth like economy comfort or whatever it is for the legroom.
See, here's the problem. I only fly economy comfort. So what economy comfort is on these flights is the same legroom or worse than I get on my way to Minneapolis, but 13 more hours on the plane.
Gee, that's a tough one.
Yeah, I haven't figured that one out yet. But I'm still super excited to go. Like, this is like the epitome of a first world problem. I have a very good friend. My very good friend is marrying somebody he loves. It's in a cool place I've never been, and I can make it there. I just have to decide how much I want to suffer for 15 hours on a plane. It's really the epitome of a first.
You know what? Well, let's throw this to our audience who's been listening to our podcast. Tweet at us at the Daily Gopher or at Chris Hockfeld, or whatever. Go AUfer. What is your Twitter handle now?
At GoAUfer.
At GoAUfer or the Daily Gopher, or of course, leave us a comment on the Daily Gopher as to whether or not Chris should splurge for that upgrade.
I like it. I think that's a good way to end it. Let's crowdsource the decision for my future deep vein thrombosis. And on that, go Gophers. Sky Uma, row the boat.
Go Gophers, row the boat.